This is NPR.
Hey everyone, it's Cardiff. Welcome to The Indicator from Planet Money. Joined today am I by Danielle Kurtzleben from the NPR Politics Desk. Hello, Danielle.
Hello, I love being here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You're filling in for Stacey Vanek-Smith while she's away writing a book. We miss you, Stacey, by the way. And we solicited from our listeners a bunch of questions for you to answer while you were with us because you're a policy wonk, a nerd, if you will.
I don't like that. I feel like calling yourself a nerd is like, it's a humble brag. It's a humble brag. Yeah.
Withdrawn.
Yeah.
Withdrawn. Okay.
Bam.
You are Danielle Kurtzleben, who does her job.
Yes.
And today that includes answering our listeners' questions about policy, because that's your thing.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So we've got three questions all about economic policy and its impacts coming right up after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Microsoft. Studying snow leopards helps us understand their ecosystem. Microsoft AI quickly analyzes thousands of remote camera images so researchers can understand these animals and their environment. Microsoft.com/AI.
Okay, our first question comes from listener Matt Blue.
Hello, Indicator team. This is Matt Blue from Chicago. I hear President Trump and his administration claim a lot of responsibility for much of the positive economic news. Is there any way we can actually measure the economic impact of the three major economic policies they've enacted? Tax cuts, regulation cuts, and tariffs?
Danielle, what do you think?
All right. So we have a lot being asked here. We have three different parts. Let's start with tax cuts, also known as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, passed at the end of 2017.
I remember. Yeah.
Right. One of the best places to go is the Congressional Research Service that put out a report just this last June, or rather it updated a report about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We're just going to call it the Tax Act.
Okay.
So that report said that, look, the tax cuts that were enacted, whatever effects there were, if any, the report said, were pretty small, at least in the first year. So throughout calendar year 2018.
So last year, this tax act would have boosted the economy a little bit, or maybe, but that effect was temporary, according to this report.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things that the report said was, listen, a lot of the tax cut was directed at businesses, people who were higher income, and those people are less likely to spend the money, right? Because they have money to spend. But whereas if you give it to someone with very little money, they very much would spend it because they need that money much more.
Right. So according to the analyses I saw, too, this tax act was largely regressive. In other words, its benefits went disproportionately to people with means already. I just want
to
make the point.
And to corporations also.
And to corporations. I want to make the point here, by the way, that you can see this effect in the savings rate, which is still at about 8-point-something%. So it's still pretty high. In other words, if the goal was to get people to spend the money, that might not have been what happened.
Right. I mean, that's possible. Yeah. I mean, long story short, thus far, despite the fact that President Trump does claim a lot of great things of the Tax Act, thus far, at least last year, we didn't see anything huge come from it.
Okay.
In terms of growth.
So that's the Tax Act.
Right.
All right. And some of this question also asked us about other economic policies like tariffs.
Right. So we got a report from the Congressional Budget Office, and this report came out just last week. It said that the tariffs that have been put in place thus far are projected to lower economic output. You know, it's going to make goods more expensive. It's inspired retaliatory tariffs from other countries. It makes businesses less certain. There are all sorts of effects of them. But the long story short is that they said that by 2020, the tariffs will reduce the level, this is a quote, of real U.S. GDP by roughly 0.3%. Which might sound abstract to our listeners, but this is less abstract, that it would also reduce average real household income by $580.
Okay, so that's a lot of actual money that people are not going to see because of this.
Right.
I want to make a point here, by the way, because you cite the Congressional Research Service and its reports, the Congressional Budget Office and its reports. These are great resources, obviously, for you and me as economics reporters, but these are publicly available. And they are meant to provide nonpartisan analysis so our listeners can go and find these reports themselves.
Right, yes. And they are written in relatively plain language. So people listening, I highly recommend if you want to learn more, definitely go to the CBO. They are an awesome resource. I love the CBO. They're great. The final question here, regulations. That is a lot trickier because There are so many regulations in so many areas. And this administration, yes, has promised to cut regulations, and they have. But on any given regulation, there can be so many different effects. Like, for example, there's been recent reporting on the Trump administration relaxing fuel efficiency standards for cars. Well, that might make it cheaper for Ford or Chevy to manufacture a car. But also, once I buy that car, then I have to pay a whole bunch more for fuel. So maybe it's better for the company, worse off for me. I mean, there are any number of effects you can come up with from regulations. Any number of think tanks, the left-leaning Center for American Progress, the more business-oriented Competitive Enterprise Institute, think tanks like those, they've put out different reports on what the deregulation's effects have been. You can definitely go and read those. But the point is that this is all very complicated, and we'll probably see the knock-on effects from these as the years go on.
So possibly trading economic growth now for economic growth later, or vice versa.
Right.
Okay, great. So let's go to our second question, which comes from Allison Yates. We don't have her audio, so instead, Rachel Cohn, our producer, is going to read that question. And what the heck? Do it in her best British accent.
Okay, getting into my British accent. Literally, where does all the political donation money actually go? How much goes to campaign staff versus travel costs versus advertising versus physical goods like flyers, buttons, banners, etc.? Who actually profits off of campaign donations? Where does the money go?
That's quite an accent, yeah?
I know.
Yeah. Danielle, political donation money, I actually have no clue about this. This is all in your turf. So,
ads. That's where it goes. Ads.
Ads, that's it?
Next
all
question.
All the money goes
done.
To ads.
I mean, this is your simple answer here is this, is that, yeah, if you're looking at presidential races, the majority of what the campaigns spend their money on is media of some sort. TV ads, online videos, banner ads, print advertising, mailers that might end up in your inbox. Like, there are all sorts of things that they spend this money on. But a lot of it does go to ads. If you listen to our show from Monday, you know that it's
they don't make a big difference.
It's not that they don't make a difference. It's that it's not always clear. It's hard to tell what a difference they make. You might raise someone's name recognition. Doesn't necessarily mean that that mailer you put in their mailbox really got them out to vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So most of it is ads. I think a lot of people actually might be surprised by this because you think of a campaign and you think, God, you need to pay all those staffers. They're in offices all throughout the country. There's overhead costs like office space. And you would think, well, a lot of the money would go to that. But no, actually, the majority of the money goes to advertising.
Right. So I looked at some data from the Center for Responsive Politics, which is at opensecrets.org. In 2016, around 58% of both Clinton and Trump spending, so really close, roughly the same share of their campaign spending in 2016 was ads. And this is where it really gets interesting, is where the two campaigns diverge. Because depending on how you run your campaign, you're going to do totally different things. Like Hillary Clinton in 2016 had a much bigger staff than Donald Trump. She spent nearly 20% of all of her money on salaries, $74 million. Donald Trump reported spending nearly $8.3 million on salaries. Now, he had a much leaner campaign staff-wise, at least, but he spent his money on other things. He spent much more on administrative things like rent, like travel, airplane tickets, hotel rooms, all of that. He also spent much more on strategy and research. So, for example, polling, that sort of thing. Now, I want to give one big caveat here. These numbers are subject to how the campaigns kept their records. They're counting what Trump classified as a strategist or what Trump classified as administrative. So different campaigns might keep the records differently, but these are at least ballpark ideas to get a sense of just the shape of the campaign. So yeah, depending on the campaign, you can spend way more on fundraising or less. Yeah. It totally
one
depends.
One way or the other, every 4 years, a nice little boost to the advertising industry, huh?
Yeah.
Learned a lot from that. Danielle Kurtzleben, this was fun.
Yes, thank you.
If people want to send in more questions, maybe we'll squeeze in one more of these sessions before you go. Where can they get a hold of you?
I would say find me on Twitter. You can find me at
Titonka.
T-I-T-O-N-K-A. Yes. Also the name of a really lovely town in Iowa that I'm from. But yeah, find me on Twitter.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Rachel Cohn, fact-checked by Emily Wang, edited by Patty Hirsch, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.